Welcome, Corinne, to the Women's Bodybuilding Podcast. I'm so happy to have you on. I don't think I could call it a Women's Bodybuilding Podcast if you wasn't part of it, to be honest.
Thank you, thank you.
Usually, before I do a podcast, I write down loads of notes of things I want to talk about, and yours seems to take up a few pages.
That's fine. We'll get through them. I'm quite efficient, so we'll just go.
I wanted to start with your last competition that you did. That was, you were in physique and you came second.
Yes.
Was you happy with that placing?
Yes, actually, because I was in, I mean, I've had a lot of people say, oh, you know, we don't understand the placing, etc., etc. But I very much do, because I was just in the wrong class. I entered women's physique, which is what at that point in time I believed my physique to be. So I thought I was women's physique, and I presented the best package that I had brought to stage. I was certainly the most muscle I'd had, the best condition, and I brought that and presented it, and I didn't win, which is cool, because the feedback was simply it was too hard, it was too conditioned, it was too much for women's physique. So yes, I'm happy with it, because I didn't not win because of anything I did wrong. You know, I brought what I wanted to bring. I was incredibly happy with my look, incredibly happy with the prep. So yes, like I was pleased with it. Obviously everyone wants to win, and it wasn't the news I thought I was going to get. So at first I was taken aback by, oh, okay, fine. But yeah, I was very pleased with it.
There wasn't a bodybuilding category there, though, was there?
No, there wasn't. No, it was only women's physique. So, but to be honest, if there had been, I wouldn't have entered that, because I thought I was women's physique. So on the day, obviously, if there had been different classes, it's possible someone would have said to me, don't enter that, enter bodybuilding. But it wasn't there, and even if it was, I would have gone thinking that I was women's physique. So that's my fault. I take full ownership of that. I didn't look properly into the criteria. I didn't potentially look at really what I was bringing, and that it wasn't actually ticking the boxes that they were looking for. But I think you sort of, sometimes you can't compare yourself to yourself. So it's quite difficult to know what you look like in comparison to others without literally standing next to them. And then when I look back at the photographs and things, I was like, I get it.
I've seen the video quite a few times, and I'm like, you're so much bigger, but I couldn't tell if you're huge or the other girls are smaller, if that makes sense.
I think I'm certainly not huge. I know that this year I'll be definitely at the bottom of the size. Well, I think I will be. I mean, who knows? Mm. Apparently, I don't know what I look like. But no, I'm certainly not. I'm certainly going to be on the smaller end this side. So I think I was just like a bigger women's physique girl, and then obviously condition gives that illusion of size as well. So it's kind of a combination of the two, just accumulating to be not the right thing, basically.
Yeah, and as well, like you said about comparing to others, when you see people on screen, they do look big. Even on pictures, I can look quite big, and I'm fucking tiny. So it's just an illusion.
Oh no, I get it all the time. People will meet me in real life and they'll go, oh my God, you're actually quite small. I thought you were really tall. Everyone thinks I'm like 6 foot and like huge, but I'm actually not. I'm like 5'3" and a little bit. So everyone's like, oh.
A little bit.
But then in my head, I'm like, yeah, surely you know that Jordan's really short and I'm not taller than him. So being like, but people assume that I'm this huge woman, because when you see a standalone picture of anybody, you can never tell if they're small, they're tall, they're big, that you just can't tell. So it's impossible.
Are you happy to be moving up to bodybuilding? Was that always like the goal, or
no? It was just, you know, happened? What it's just happened. It's in all honesty, it almost sounds stupid, but I've never really had a goal. I didn't start this thinking I'm going to be a female bodybuilder. I didn't even know bodybuilding existed, to be honest. So when it started, it was just a case of let's train. Do you want to do a comp? Okay. I just went with it. And as it's obviously developed, I mean, I really thought that women's physique was when that came around a good few years back. Because actually in 2013, when I was doing UK BFF, women's physique didn't exist. So this was after like about only a year or 2 years of competing. Women's physique wasn't a thing. And they said to me, you need to go into the bodybuilding class, because I obviously wasn't figure. And it was like, okay, cool. And at that point, I did do a women's bodybuilding competition that I was like, there's no way that I am this, because I wasn't. And then a year or so later, that's why I switched over to NABBA and WFF, because they had the trained figure. So that was a lot more me. It was like really conditioned, but still really quite small in terms of muscularity. And that's what I fitted into. And then they brought out women's physique, and I was like, oh, brilliant. That's like perfect for what I am, kind of thing. So no, the goal was never ever to move up, but it obviously is now, because they've realigned the categories as well. There's been a shift with the sort of reintroduction of women's bodybuilding into the Olympia. They've then almost, I don't want to say downsized the other classes, because I don't want that to come across as, you know, derogatory or anything like that. It's a very positive thing. They've just made a much clearer distinction between women's physique being slightly smaller, slightly softer, and women's bodybuilding being slightly bigger, slightly harder. So this year, I think you'll see a lot of the more conditioned or slightly bigger women's physique girls actually moving up to the bodybuilding class. So there's almost just been a slight shift in movement. So it was never the goal, but it is apparently what I am. So it's the goal now. It's the goal.
Do you think you would, if you were at the Olympia stage 2020, do you think you would be too big for them physique girls? Because Olympia athletes always seem to be bigger.
Yeah, definitely. I think the best athletes on the Olympia stage, they've always, they're the best of the best, aren't they? So they're always going to have like the best muscularity, whether that's size or whether it's more just like structure. They're always going to have the best of something. That's why they're there. But I think actually, to be honest, even looking at the women's physique Olympia girls, I don't really think I would have fitted in particularly, because I just think when I get lean, I bring like a really grainy look, and that's just not what they want, you know. So some of the girls in the top places of the Olympia in women's physique were absolutely, their condition was insane, but it's just not the same look, and you can't sometimes tell, you know, like with Branch Warren, for example, just to think of a bodybuilder, he had a really hard, dry, grainy look, didn't he? And like, whereas Phil Heath, for example, has a much sort of softer, less dry look. And I think when you've got that sort of physique, you sometimes can't, it almost doesn't matter how big you are, you're not going to fit the look that they really want for that class, if that makes sense. So no, I don't think I'd have placed well at that point either. I think I'm generally just do not have the look that they want for that class.
Yeah. I find I never really understand the judging of the Olympia, because it's so different every time, and I can't follow it. Like with bikini girls, I can't follow, but that changes all the time.
To be honest, I have no idea. I don't know anything about the bikini class. I couldn't judge it, because it's not as black and white, is it? You know, like with men's bodybuilding, you're like, okay, cool, he's the biggest, he's the most conditioned, you know, therefore he wins. Like with bikini, I think it's a lot, you know, there's a lot more subjective kind of measures, I think. So I think the women's class is always quite hard to judge, because there is so much more, there's a lot more subjective opinion going on with the judging. I don't know. But having said that, like, I don't think they're wrong, if that makes sense. So I couldn't necessarily, rank people. But then when I see it, I'm like, oh, okay, that makes sense. If that, you know.
Yeah.
So it's difficult, yeah.
Like the bikini girls were starting to get bigger, but then last year they were back to being a lot smaller. Which I suppose when you've got more categories, you can.
Yeah, that kind of fits back in sync with the sort of shifting of the classes, just to make the, you know, real separation between you are bikini, you are figure, your women's physique, your bodybuilding. When you've got four, I think it's really important that you are fitting into the right one. And obviously there's wellness as well. I think this is the first year, isn't it? And wellness is going to be there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then that's another dimension as well. So there's five women's classes now, which is really good. It's really exciting because it just gives more scope, I suppose, for people to develop their physique into a specific way or whatever fits them best. So yeah, it certainly makes things hard, but
not as big a jump then. If you want to move up, like if a bikini wanted to go to figure, huge jump. And I always thought there needs to be something in the middle.
Yeah, that's true, and now there is. So I think it's a really good thing. We just need to know where to put ourselves, and that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. You were repping for the Arnolds last year.
Ish. Was that last year? Do you know what? I've completely lost track. I applied to do the Arnold. Yeah, it was last year, wasn't it? I applied to do it, but I didn't get it. So I started my prep to do it.
I think it got cancelled.
Anyway. No, Rhea did it. So it, the
oh, that one. Okay, right.
The Ohio one, yeah. So that was the one that I mean, the UK show in March was the end of March anyway. So I knew I was targeting that period of time to compete. So I applied to do the Arnolds, but I didn't get accepted to do it anyway.
I didn't know it was a accepted type thing.
Yeah, no, it's with the Arnolds, you have to have placed top three in a pro show within the last year or something like that. They changed the rules every now and then, but from what I believe it to be, it's you have to have placed top three, which I had done, but I'd only placed third in one pro show once. So a lot of the girls doing it are sort of, you know, girls that have done the Olympia or have a bit more of a track record. I'd only done two pro shows, so it wasn't, I thought I'd apply, nothing to lose. I was allowed to apply, but no, I didn't get accepted into it anyway, so it didn't, yeah. So that's why.
Yeah, you had a show plan anyway, so it's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
You did an Instagram post where you said about it's important, you think it's important that people do shows to get your show experience.
Yeah.
Which I think is quite interesting because a lot of people do the opposite and they'll wait a long time to do a show. How many shows did you do before you turned pro?
Well, I suppose every show I ever did before I turned pro, I did before I turned pro. So, you know, I did my first show in 2012 in figure when I was just... I was going to say I was prep, but that's not fair.
I've seen pictures. You still got a lot of muscle.
I was just my first show, you know. So that I was just that. Yeah. So, do you know what? I don't know offhand how many shows I've done in total. But before, when the goal became to try to get my pro card, when they started doing the international shows and stuff, and it wasn't just that one shot of the British, which I did try. I competed at the British twice and both times didn't come top six. So it was completely chucked to the side at that point. And that's also when I went and did NABBA and WFF because I kind of thought I'm never going to become a pro. So I might as well go and do something else and become a pro in those federations and whatever. So I directly to try and get my pro card, I did San Marino in 2017. And then I did, and then I got it the next year in Italy. But ironically, I actually entered the bodybuilding class to get my pro card and won it in that. Made it to me. Yeah.
You've done full circle.
Exactly. So I only tried, knowingly tried to get it once, didn't get it. And then the next year, I was like, I want to get this. It was a last minute show that I entered, actually. And I was like, well, I'm going to do a bodybuilding class and just get it. So two directly, but obviously all of them leading up to it. But I think for me, like with women's physique, there is all bodybuilding, because now I don't know what I'm talking about, because I do both. So with women's physique, I think there's far fewer girls really that do it when you compare it to sort of something like bikini. So I think the chances of getting your pro card is higher, you know, if they've got to give one away. And there's less girls entering it, statistically you're going to get it. So the sort of point about the post was more just, people are always saying to me all the time, oh no, I'm not going to step on stage until I'm ready and I'm going to win a show. And I just think, that's a really, for me, I think it was a very silly attitude, because you're probably not going to win your first show. And if you think you are, you've got the wrong mindset. Like, you just need to do it. And as proved in my last showing, had I have not done that competition, I'd be sitting here today still trying to do women's physique, but it's the wrong thing to do. So I could have essentially, say that show had been cancelled, which it very nearly was, if I hadn't done it, I'd be prepping this year to do women's physique. And then essentially, I'd be wasting a whole nother year competing in completely the wrong place, only to sort of disappoint myself, because yet again, I won't get to the Olympia because I'm doing the wrong thing. So how do you know, sitting at home, if you're trying to be bikini or figure, whatever it is, but what if you're in the wrong class? So you're going to wait forever and then compete on stage and then get told, no, that was, and then you've wasted how many years? So I don't see the point.
That's interesting, because I was going to wait until next year to compete, but maybe I should just get
up. compete now. No, like, you know, it's a funny one, because obviously, you know, if you're not ready to compete, that's something very different. Like, if mentally, physically, you're not ready and you want to do it next year and you've planned to do it next year, again, great. But my point was more, don't wait around for years and years and years and years to try to become the best before you step on stage, because someone is going to be better.
Yeah.
So don't wait for it.
And I don't think I've ever seen someone go to the Olympia and win their first time they're there either. But
it's very rare. Like, yeah, there's the odd sort of the odd amazing physique that's just been hiding somewhere, and they pop out to do their first show and then they win. And it happens. I'm not saying it doesn't, but I'm talking about majority. I'm talking about all of us that want to do this, want to compete. I just don't think you should wait around too long, because as well, if you want to do it and you do want to win, you do want to be a pro, you do want to do X, Y, and Z, that means indirectly you're telling me that you love this. So if you love it, why are you not doing the bits that you love? I love competing. If I didn't want to compete, if I couldn't compete every year, I'd be upset, because I like it. I want to step on stage every year. So yes, I want to be better, but I'm not going to wait 2 years to be double better. I'm just going to do it every year and get a little bit better, you know? Yeah. So that's just my opinion.
I suppose every time you prep as well, it gets a bit better.
Yeah, it does. If you've controlled all your variables, you've controlled the minute you step off stage to the minute you step back on stage, if you're controlling it, the prep is going to be better. You are going to have improved. If you've completely wasted your time, no, you won't have improved. But then, you know, again, if you really love competing and you really love the process, then you're in control of it all. So why wouldn't you have done the right thing?
Yeah.
So that's the way I look at it.
Yeah. And if you would have waited another year, you might have been bigger.
Yeah. Exactly. And then who knows?
Could have been a third instead.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So I just think, you know, people should just follow the process, do what they want to do, compete, see where they're at, take that as great. X, Y, and Z was better than me. This is what I need to improve on. And then you've got a real firm. So, because going back to what we said as well, you don't know how big you are. You don't know how good you are unless you're comparing yourself. So what's a better way to compare yourself than to follow the process, get all the way down, compete, enjoy the process, enjoy the day, and then literally subjectively know what you've got to improve on.
Yeah. So, do you really enjoy being on stage? Do you prefer the stage bit than the prep bit, or do you just love it all?
I really like being on stage. I really love it. But I do enjoy the prep as well. To be honest, I just like it all. I like prepping. I like... It's hard to say I prefer one bit to the other, because obviously without the prep, you're not going to be on stage anyway. But I enjoy it all. I can't decide, but I like
it. I think you can tell by your posing that you like being up there.
It's just nice. It's just different. Like, I like performing. I like displaying what you've done. Because I think a lot of the time, you know, obviously everything's put out on Instagram and various different sites and stuff, so it's not like we're all just secretly working hard secretly, you know. We're not, because obviously people are seeing the process. But although, you know, the hours and hours and hours that we're in the gym and stuff, people don't actually see that. People don't actually see every single rep, you know. People don't take every step and don't cook every meal and whatever. So it's that is your chance to show your hard work through every single day. So I think it's nice. And plus, I just like getting my makeup done and wearing a bikini. So it works on both ways.
Yeah. On your posing, there's quite a few poses that I've only ever seen you do. I think it's your side tricep.
Yeah.
And there's another one, your leg is kind of in the air.
My front double bicep.
It might be the rear. Your double bicep. But yeah, I've never seen anyone else do them poses. Yeah, I thought they were like mandatory.
No, well, I don't do a normal rear relaxed, which is probably one of the reasons I'm not women's physique, because I like to top my glutes, which isn't a very feminine thing to do.
But look at your glutes though.
But that's the thing, I don't really care. That's my thing, you know. So it's my own fault for not fitting into the club. But I've had help before with posing from both Emma Hyman and Rosanna Hart, and they're both amazing. They've got dance backgrounds, and I know Emma still poses and helps people pose now. I don't think Rosie does anymore, but I luckily got in there when she still did. So I've had sort of help and advice from those as well, but I really basically I seek a lot of my posing inspiration from men's classic bodybuilders, because that to me is just beautiful. I really like the shape, the flow. If I could be any class, I'd be
a classic
bodybuilder, because I think it's cool. Like, it's just, it's lovely, and I think it's really elegant, and I think that's important. And I think it just draws between, you know, it allows you to show off muscularity and condition, but in a more elegant way, which I think is important for, you know, the female classes.
Yeah.
So that's why I do it. So I've probably stolen them off like Hunter Labrador. Not Hunter Labrador. What's his dad's name? It's completely gone out of my head. Anyway, Labrador. You'll know the old classic bodybuilders. I'll remember it later down the line, I'll say it. I've probably stolen them from old classic bodybuilders, really, than my own. But thank you. That's a nice compliment, actually.
Makes you stand out a lot more, especially the glutes.
Thank you. Yeah, well,
I've never seen anyone, man or woman, with glutes like that.
that is the ultimate compliment for me. So
do you just tend to lose fat there first?
It's changed over the years, actually. But it's taken a lot of years to get into that condition. I wasn't just blessed with a bottom with no fat. Like that didn't. I had a huge fat bum when I was at uni. It was luscious. But it's taken time and just persistence. And then every prep, actually, my body fat goes on differently. After every prep, my body fat distribution changes slightly. Like this time, for example, I've gained more fat on my abs, for example. In the past, it's been like the back of my arms and then various different places. So now I think it's my development thing as well. So I tend to find the bigger the muscle group as well, it tends to appear to be leaner because it's bigger. So my quads never look that fat, if we want to use the word fat, because they're quite developed. Mm-hmm. Whereas the other muscle groups that aren't, they look fatter, basically. So I get a fair chunk of fat in my glutes as well, but it's just a case of persistence. And then once they've been lean once, it's easier to get them lean again. I have found.
Yeah. I didn't know that fat could move, if that makes sense. I thought it was kind of like a genetic thing. You hold it.
Yeah, I suppose it is. People are genetically disposed to be a certain body type and to stop, obviously, women. And it's related to hormones as well. So obviously, if you've got more estrogen, then you will, even with men, you'll be able to look at men's physiques and you'll be able to tell if they've got higher estrogen from the way that their fat distributes across the body. But it does tend to change, and I don't know the reason why it does. I just have observed that to be the case with myself. I don't actually know the answer, but obviously fat tissue is just fat tissue. If you gain fat, it will just grow. It must just be due to hormone fluctuations as to where it redevelops, I guess.
Yeah, so I can stop blaming my dad, the reason why I get all mine in the middle.
Yeah, yeah. Just use any excuse.
You've done quite a bit of guest posing. I've seen a couple of videos of your guest posing. Invited to do that?
I've only actually done one.
Guest you must pose have just in, seen different angles video.
Yeah, it's probably the same video. Yeah. I think I've only ever done one in Austria, and that was, do you know what, I'm rubbish at remembering years because I can't even remember what year it is now. It was about three years ago, actually. So we've got some friends over in Austria, and they had one of their championships, and they just invited, it was 2017, so 4 years ago. I was about 3 or 4 weeks out from the NABBA Worlds, and they just invited me over to join a guest post, and I was like, yeah, cool. So just did it.
Chance for me to get a bikini, thank you.
Exactly, and to go to Austria and have a little explore and stuff. So it was cool. I do enjoy doing it, and I definitely would do it again if the opportunity presented itself.
If anyone wants to invite me now, thank you.
Yeah, I'll just get out there. That's
I just had something on the tip of my tongue I was going to say. That's annoying. Oh, no, it's gone out. Oh, yeah, it was about flying because you said Austria. And you've competed in it, obviously, Italy as well. Does flying make a difference? Like, if you're in prep, does flying cause? Because some people get water retention on the plane and stuff like that.
I've flown all over the place. I've competed in various different places, Russia, Rio, I've flown to lots of places, and it's never made a difference. And in honesty, the reason for that is because I'm genuinely in condition. If you're suffering from water retention, you've still got body fat, because water stores where body fat is, in a nutshell. So I never bother. If anything, I lose weight over a flight. I'm not saying you should do it on a flight, but because my energy has been higher. So walking through an airport, the sort of subconscious stress of traveling, all of those sorts of things, you've literally done more steps, you've used more energy. So by the time I land, I'm usually flatter. So no, it doesn't affect me at all, other than negatively, I suppose, because I don't really want to turn up flat. But
So you're just using the traveling as cardio.
Yeah, don't get on the treadmill, just go on the fly. No, but I think if you're actually in condition, you won't have a problem, and if you're not, then you will.
From your last competition, what was your diet like for that? Like, to get in the condition you was, like, what was you eating? Yeah. How much was you eating?
So my calories usually end on. For the last couple of years, I always know my end numbers, just because I'm so structured year round. It's like, I know, like, obviously Jordan preps me, but we already know what I'm going to be eating after this show. Like, we know, because my body has done it so many times, and I'll know roughly what I need. So basically, when I end a prep, my lowest sort of totals are about 1500 calories on a rest day, and usually about 1800 calories on a training day. But then at that point, I usually reach that, because I'll slowly sort of reduce calories as we go. And then I'll usually hit that number maybe 3-4 weeks out. But it's at that point that I then have to start eating more. So every sort of maybe 3-4 days, I'll have a higher carb day, which will be like 700 carb or something. So it's not really a true bottom line, because once I hit that point, I then actually eat more calories across the week, if that makes sense. But those are the numbers that I will end a prep on typically, is sort of like 1500, let's say 1800 training day.
So you would eat the same things, just more of?
Yeah, I don't change my diet year round. I just eat more in a surplus, less in a deficit. I never change. I like what I eat, and I like my food choices. So it's literally up or down, and that's it.
Even in your off season, just still?
Exactly the same. Never change it. Year round, I have the same food groups for every meal because I like it.
You must be a pretty good cook then, because I'm so bad at cooking chicken. Honestly, when I take it to work and I just lift up this bland chicken breast,
I bet they're like, oh. I don't even eat chicken at the moment. I don't have any meat in my diet. I prefer fish and stuff. So
I would suggest you don't watch Seaspiracy then, because I've just had to say to my coach, can you please take fish out?
Oh, don't. I just love I could eat the ocean. Honestly, there's not a bit of fish you'd put in front of me that I don't know. I love it. Like prawns, fish, eggs. I prefer those to. I do eat meat. I'm not vegetarian or anything. But I'm not a big red meat lover, really. I'd always prefer to eat salmon over steak, just out of literally preference. So I just eat the same thing year, and I have done for about the last decade. Because I'm sad.
Do you find you can't taste it anymore? Or do you...
No, I just really like the taste of it. I just like it. Like, genuinely, I like my food. Because if I wanted to change it, I could. And no one's telling me to eat. Like, I don't... Like, you know, obviously Jordan preps me, but he doesn't tell me what to eat. He just says, like, all right, take your calories up by this amount, or take your calories down by this amount, and I'll just take it in and out. Like, if I wanted to eat something different, I just would.
Yeah.
And every now and then I'll put something in, but not really. I don't like change.
Sauces?
No, I use some zero sugar ketchup with carb meals, but that's it. Salt, pepper. That's it.
Job done.
Exactly. So no, I'm not a good cook. Just boring, probably. But no, yeah. But I genuinely like my dinner, so.
I'm the same. I can just shovel in bland food and it just is what it is. I'm a celiac, so I can't eat a lot of stuff anyway.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I'm a shit cook, so.
Double whammy, really.
Yeah, exactly. So for you, because you're so structured all the time, there's no like off plan meal, like you won't get a pizza.
I just don't like pizza that much. but I just find it boring. Like, maybe I'd have a slice, but the thought of eating the whole pizza is just like, I'd rather eat something else. But no, we don't eat a plan. Like Christmas Day, sure, I'll have Christmas dinner.
A bigger fish.
I'll bring my own fish and salt and pepper. No. So I don't need to. So I don't, like, my calories are high enough, I don't crave anything. If I was in, not in a comp prep situation, and I went to a wedding, and I'd eat the food, like, it's not like I don't do that, like, I do, but it would only be a real event. Like, even if I went to a birthday party, I wouldn't eat the buffet if I didn't need to, like, because I don't need to, you know, like, it doesn't take anything away from my life not joining in with that kind of thing. So the only times I would do it on Christmas or on my terms, you know, if it was my birthday and I went out for a meal with the family, I'd have whatever I wanted. But that's it. I don't have a weekly cheat meal or anything like that. Because it's just not
necessary. Yeah. But when you're coaching other people, do they tend to ask for one, or would you give them one, or no, they're structured? As well.
But this is the thing, this is why I'm not really the best coach for most people, because everyone wants to do like an fitness macros kind of thing. I don't see any need whatsoever for cheat meals. They don't, why? It's calories in, calories out. So I don't do them really. But again, you know, if someone was going to a wedding or something like that and they said, oh, I've got a wedding at the weekend, I'm gonna have the meal, okay, cool. Like, if it's not, you know, if they're not in a comp prep situation, my advice is normally be like, okay, great, just make sure you eat all your other meals and then don't use that as an excuse to continue eating shit for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
And Christmas Day, have off. That's the rules. But no, so I don't do those. Obviously, in a comp prep situation, when people start to get lean, much like with myself, if they then need higher days of higher carbs and stuff, then I will give that to them. But often that's structured, like I'll plan out the meal and it'll be X amount of carbs per meal. It won't just be go out of a cheat meal, because a lot of the time people can't control themselves. So if they go, you know, people are craving and there's so many, you know, hormones going on in their head telling them to eat. If I said to a lot of people, go and have a pizza or something, I know it would end up being a pizza, another pizza, three cheesecakes, off to Burger King, a couple of Mars bars, you know, and then that's not helpful. Don't undo all of your hard work that you've just done for the week. You've lost 2 pounds or something. Do you know? So with me, it's all just very, very structured.
Yeah, I'm more of a meal plan person as well, just because I can't be trusted with macros. I will squeeze in a chocolate bar. I will.
That's yeah, exactly.
And then it's a free-for-all, so just tell me what to eat, that's it. I can't.
Exactly, and I think a lot of people prefer that because it keeps them in check, and then, you know, yeah, it's easier.
Yeah, now I'm off-season, I get one off-plan meal a week, and he said the calories, and then when I did my check-in, I said I couldn't physically eat that much calories. I was trying to force it, and he was like, oh, you don't have to eat that many calories. That's just the maximum. I was like, I'm trying to force my food in. And I'm like, not enjoying it, thinking I had to eat the calories and I didn't.
Well, I'm going to credit to you for trying to stick to your plan. Like, I was really trying. That's good. Exactly.
Those, pizza fries was too much.
Don't. Well, I'm glad you know now, not to force it in.
Now I don't. Minimal work.
Eat till you're done, sort of thing.
Yeah. When you're that lean, obviously for the diet, and you mentioned hormones, does your period stop?
Yeah. I probably get about one period a year if I'm lucky. There was a period. There's a bit of a pun. There was a phase of time. There was a phase of time when I stayed really lean, like throughout off seasons and stuff, and I really didn't push my body weight up at all, and I didn't actually have a period for 5 years. So they came back to me 2 years ago, three 2018. From 2013 to 18, I didn't have anything at all, and then in 2018 I had one, and then I've had sporadic ones since then. So yeah, I very rarely get periods, to be honest.
Are you back up to like a healthier body fat now to have them, or they just haven't come back?
Oh no, I've had one recently this year. I usually, in the last couple of years when I've had them back, I'll get them usually a couple of months after a show. So where I know my body is back to just being in that healthy range, I suppose. So then I'll have one then. So yeah, I'm certainly not lean now. I'm at the end of my off season, at the start of my prep. So yeah, that's why I've had one now. But to me, it's part and parcel. It's very common within the athletic field in lots of sports. It's not necessarily just hormonal. Well, it is hormonal, but it can do just with how hard you train. Like the female athlete triad's a very real thing. So it's not, I do regular blood work and stuff, and nothing is ever wrong. So it's not like I've actually got something wrong with me. It's just the way my body is. And obviously when you do reach a real low body fat, then your body knows it couldn't bear a child. So obviously it stops you being able to. It's just part and parcel with the lifestyle, I think. And it's, as long as my blood work and my health is in check, then personally for me, I don't mind that so much.
Natural contraception then, I guess.
Absolutely. So it's fine.
sounds perfect.
I haven't got time for children. So
I've got the copper coil, which I wouldn't recommend anyone, by the way.
Okay.
Heaviest periods in the world. So what I wouldn't give to have mine stop, but I've never been that lean. Yeah. For them to stop. I think I was like, my last year I was like 2 weeks late, and I was like, oh, maybe I've missed it, lucky. But no, I didn't. Unfortunately not. So didn't have it for so long, but if you're now up to like more body fat, how come it doesn't
come? Well, I suppose the thing is that I obviously compete, and then you stay in, you know, a relatively low, it's not like I come off stage and all of a sudden I'm 40 pounds heavier and able to childbear. So I think it's just that period of adjustment. So after the Copsley, for example, I competed at the beginning of November, and then I literally had a cycle about a week ago. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Here it is. So it takes that long, I suppose, for hormones to settle, for body fat to creep up, and for your body to get back into its normal routine. But I know at that point as well, if I was then to not restart a pump prep or whatever, then from that point, I would probably then just pick up a monthly cycle and be normal, so to speak, or normal for my body. So I know there are women that don't get periods or whatever, so I'm not saying they're not. Mm-hmm. So it, just in relation to myself. But obviously, because I still am competing, I'll get to the point where I have one and then it's like time to get lean again. So then it doesn't really have time to normalize for myself. But I would imagine, obviously, when I retire and stop competing, I would imagine that I will have, it'll be sort of 3-ish months until it comes back, and then I don't suspect it will ever go away, you know. I think it'll be then become a regular thing.
Yeah, you mentioned getting your bloods done. How often do you get your bloods checked?
Every few months. Sort of a couple of months after I compete, to check that everything's back in range, and that, because it takes a while, like pretty much like with cycles and stuff, like it takes a while afterwards for things to normalize. It's not normal to be that low in body fat. That's not what the body wants to be. So your health markers and things will take a hit. So a couple of months after that, I'll check everything's back in range and whatnot, and then it sort of gives me license to prep again. If I got them done and something was off, I would then, you know, make an intervention with sort of natural supplementation or whatever, and then I'd retest maybe a month later, and then I'm sure it'd be back in line. If it wasn't, I'd keep doing that process until it was. But every few months just to check that I'm ticking over all right.
Yeah, I never thought about getting bloods done until I did a podcast with Kate Cummins, your client. She said it, and I was like, bloods? And she was like, oh, just shocked that I had never had them done before. I actually went and got my blood taken this morning, so...
It's interesting, it's nice as well. It's good to know like where other things are, like thyroid levels and stuff like that. So it's like, I mean, I never feel unhealthy, so I'm not taking it because I'm worried about it in particular, but it's interesting to know where your levels are, because sometimes it can flag up something that maybe it's completely unrelated to what we do, but it might just be something that is good to know about, you know. Or like if you've got slightly low iron levels or slightly high iron levels, you can then adjust that with a dietary intervention or supplements, and that could be something hereditary, but unless you look, you don't know. So it might not be that you're unhealthy, but if you could, you be healthier, maybe. So I think it's always good, it's interesting, it's nice, it's good to do.
I don't know if I'd done it at the right time though, because I'm on Anavar now. I've been on for like 6 weeks. But I don't know if I was supposed to get it done before.
Well, the thing is, if anyone uses anything exogenous into their body, it will throw their markers off. So when you get your blood work back, your HDL will be low, but that is a direct, and your liver enzymes will be elevated, but then that's going to be a direct correlation to taking Anavar, because you are deliberately taking that, and that is just a side effect of doing so. So typically I advise clients or myself to take bloods 6 weeks after they have stopped their cycle or whatever they're taking, because that is about the right period of time for levels to kind of regain their normal kind of level. So I bet if you were to stop now, if you did your bloods again 6 weeks after you stop Anavar, I reckon your HDL will be a hell of a lot higher. So if it comes back and it's really low, I wouldn't panic.
I don't even know what that is, so I'm sure I'd be like, all right, yeah, cool.
Okay, lovely. This one's red. No. So HDL and LDL, cholesterol. Good cholesterol, bad cholesterol, and the ratios of the two. So it will drop your HDL quite significantly. So I wouldn't worry if it's like, basically. It should be around one. I mean, it's hard to say because you've never done it before, so we've got no comparison, but it will be higher when you're not on Anavar.
Okay. So don't panic. Well, I'm hoping it'll come back and say, so this is the reason why you can't grow muscle easily, and it has nothing to do with my training.
It will say that as well.
I'll be like, aha. Yeah,
exactly. So, and then you can blame that, and you can blame your blood, and it'll be fine.
And then I'll just take whatever supplements I need to take.
They matter you all magically, but yeah, exactly. This is what happens.
I actually just bought some liver and kidney tablets from you guys.
Oh, cool. Well, Vital Support.
Vital Support, yeah. I think, I literally only started that yesterday, so I was like, maybe I should do two.
Yeah, so that will also impact your blood levels as well. So basically, you've taken your bloods probably at the worst time, but that's good almost, because you'll know where you are with all that. So then, if you implement certain things, you'll know. So, but the thing is, you know, I don't know much about you personally and your health and things like that. But bottom line is, I think most people would know if they weren't in a good spot, you know. So we're always going to get results back, and there's always going to be something that's slightly high, something that's slightly low. But again, there's so much variability between each person, just because the range is A to B on the sheet of paper and you fall just below it or just above it, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're ill. It just means that maybe actually naturally you fall slightly higher and stuff. So there's always a take all of it on board, and then the only way to really know is to kind of retest and see how you develop and you change. Yeah. And if you
I'm sure you'll be fine. I feel all right.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you do gymnastics when you were younger?
I did, yeah. I did gym. I started quite late, actually. I wish I started it earlier, but I didn't. I started when I was about 9 or 10, and then I did it all the way up to pretty much when I went to uni. So yes, I did.
Do you think that helped a lot with your muscle building? Because I know they say a lot, if you're more flexible and mobile.
Yeah. It certainly helped. I wasn't like super elite or anything like that. It's not like I was Commonwealth or Olympic level or anything like that. So I was at regional, national level. So I was decent, but by all means wasn't like phenomenal. But yeah, I certainly think it helped. I mean, especially with conditioning and just overall strength, like, you know, with gymnastics, you've got to have a certain amount of strength to be able to like flap about on the bar and whatnot. So it definitely helped. It gave me a really good foundation. There's no way it couldn't have helped, for sure. Yeah.
Do you still do any part of it? Not flapping around on a bar, but like...
Always. No, I don't actually. And I really miss it. I mean, whenever I go to field, I'll always do that. I can't. But that's about the extent. So obviously if I'm mucking around with, you know, my niece or nephew or whatever, then we play around and things like that. But I would love to go back to like adult gym or something just for fun. Maybe I will when I open back up, because I would like to. I do miss it.
Yeah, that I wanted to. I was saying to my husband I wanted to, but I've never done gymnastics. I'm like a robot. I can't touch my toes. I had to go physio yesterday because I've got hips of a 90-year-old. So is 30 too old to start gymnastics?
No.
I just want to be able to, actually, I'm not going to bother about the splits, but to be able to touch my toes, that would be pretty cool.
I think do it. I just go for it. As soon as they open up, get in. Just tell them you're 21, be fine.
I don't know if I can get my lips up first, get a bit more filler, and then I'll
be fine.
Be fine. How you started powerlifting?
Yes. So actually I did powerlifting for stage stuff. So that was in 2000 and, do you know what, I'm going to stop naming years because I'll get it wrong every time. So before I did any competitions on stage, I did powerlifting. Again, that just came about because I met Jordan at uni, so right at the end of uni. He was obviously like well into everything. I didn't even have a gym membership. So I was like, what's he doing? And then I basically just started, was like, right, show me what to do then. And that's how it started. And then it turned out that I was pretty strong, just naturally. And then about a year, so 6 months into just training, Jordan said to me, should we just enter a powerlifting comp? And I was like, okay, like what's powerlifting? Like, sure. Turned up in like my Nike trainers, some leggings and like a t-shirt, and they were like, oh, do you not have a singlet? And I was like, what's a singlet? Like, what are you talking about? They were like, do you not have any deadlift shoes? And I was like, I deadlift in these shoes, like, what? So, and then it just went from there. But luckily it was a beginner comp and they're really lovely and you're allowed to wear the wrong stuff. Yeah, and then I like pretty much broke records from day one because I was a junior at that point. And it just went from there. So then I did a few years of competing and I did a pro comp. I did the pro raw at the Arnold in Melbourne in 2016. And then that was the last, and I got over 500 total. Then that was the last time I really took it seriously, because then you can't really do both at the same time. So it was like, what should take precedent here? The stage stuff or the powerlifting? I couldn't do both at the same time because you're always going to end up not quite peaking in both. So I went down the physique route. And then I guess I enjoy that more. I find it comes easier to me, actually. So we went down that route and I've not really had time to go down the other one yet, because now the goal is to get to the Olympia. And I know that if I try to juggle them both, I just simply won't. So I need to do one thing at a time.
Yeah, I suppose you can't lift heavy when you're in a deficit.
Exactly, it just gets it gets too risky, and then there's not almost enough time in the year to do powerlifting and then this when you're trying to sort of structure it around everything. So it just became, it was like, right, just focus on one thing at a time.
What do you think you could do when, like, the latest, like the oldest powerlifting or bodybuilding?
Probably bodybuilding, because a lot of the women in my class as well, that some of them are like 50. Like,
yeah.
So yeah, they really do keep going. I will not be doing it when I'm 50. I've decided that already. I'm good. I think with powerlifting, it depends on your body. Like, I've been training really hard and really heavy for a long time now. And is it risky to then try and do powerlifting after this? It might be. If my body doesn't want to do that, and it gives me signs of little niggles here, little niggles there, I'm not pushing it. Because the last thing I want to do is break my back, snap a knee tendon. You know, it's just not, when you think about things in the grand scheme, I'm not prepared to damage my body in that way. So if my body wants to do it and lets me do it, then I'll go back to that. And if it doesn't, and mentally and physically, if I don't push to that level either, then I won't. So I don't really know the answer. I would love to go back. I'd love to get a 600 total, because I know at my strongest I can do that. But whether realistically my body will want to do that, I don't know. So yes, I'd like to, but I'm going to be sensible.
Yeah. Do you, you lifted raw. What does that mean?
Yeah.
Does that mean no straps?
No equipment, yeah. So in all powerlifting, you don't wear straps. But it's either equipped lifting or raw lifting. And in equipped, you wear like a squat suit. So I've never ever worn one. I don't really know what I'm talking about, because I've literally never put one on. But it's basically like an assisted lift. So the total is always a lot higher because you're physically wearing something that gives you X amount of kilos more. So whereas raw, I think it's actually split up into more categories now. I haven't really been in the field for a while, but you can do like completely raw, where it's like naked knee, so nothing, or you can wear like knee sleeves or knee wraps. So when I did it was raw powerlifting, and you're allowed to wear wraps around your knees and wrist wraps, but nothing like on elbows or any sort of suit, anything like that. So that's what raw is when I did it.
Can you wear a belt?
Yeah, you can wear a belt for pulling in stuff, but not like everything you wear has to be checked over first. So there's like rules. The belt can only be like so deep and so thick, and the knee wraps have to be a certain ply and stuff. So you have to work with the rules. You could just turn up with like a massive girdle belt and just be like, I'm raw if you want. Like, so there are rules, and you have to, and they do check you, like, well, if you break a record or something, you get off and then they like pat you down, like they're looking for like your equipment, and you're like, oh god, okay. So as long as you're wearing the right stuff, you're on.
So you get frisked after you've lifted.
You do, which is the prize, basically. So lift that, get a frisk, lovely.
you said you basically picked stuff up and you were like, yeah, I'm fucking strong. Do you think people are naturally heavy, naturally like strong? Do you think someone small can train to be strong, or do you think there is a natural thing element to it?
I think with all sports, if you look across literally every sport you can think of, the best people are always naturally disposed genetically to be good at that. So I don't think in powerlifting that size, obviously it's in weight classes anyway, but I don't think size has really got a lot to do with strength, because when you're talking about powerlifting, it actually comes down a lot to biomechanics. And actually my biomechanics to be a powerlifter are shit. Like, they're crap, honestly. I've got the worst squat ever. It's like a sissy squat. Like, I've squatted before, and people, we, friends of ours, like Rich Ellis, I don't know if you know of him. He's on our forum and he's incredible. He powerlifted when he was younger, and I think he still holds records that he set like 10 years ago. Like, he's insane. He's like seen me squat and deadlift before, and he's like, what is that? Like, that
it's legal.
It's exactly, but it's terrible. It's like awful. So, you know, I think a lot of the time strength comes down to the biomechanics. Like with powerlifting, it's like limb length. People that are typically quite short but have got long arms, for example, are really good at deadlifting. Because if you just think of the biomechanics of the lift, you're going to be at an advantage to someone who's super tall and got a lift from lifting on the floor all the way to the top, et cetera, et cetera. Same with squatting. Some people have just got a real dynamic, powerful squat. Some people don't. So I don't think, I don't think you can kind of tell if someone's going to be strong or not strong, really. And then I think, obviously, if you just apply good technique with a lot of time, anyone has the ability to be strong. But like anything, I think, you know, some people have the ability to be smarter than some people, you know, and it's just the same thing. Mm-hmm. Like I'm never going to be as clever as, you know, Albert Einstein. I'm just not. And then that's that. And then, you know, someone else is never going to be as strong as I am, because that's that. And then I'm never going to look as good as them, because that's that, you know. So we can improve what we've got for sure. And we can bully our way through genetics, which I think is definitely something I've done. I'm certainly not genetically gifted or any of these things that sometimes people say. I've just bullied my way through it. But fundamentally, the very best people are always going to have a genetic advantage, in my opinion.
How did you bully your way through it?
Just stubborn. So, like, if you tell me I can't do something, I'm like, all right, give me 10 weeks. Like, so like, people be like, oh, I bet you must be really naturally lean. I'm like, no, not at all, actually. I've actually got a slow thyroid, but, you know, people want to say a lot of the time, you know, it's very easy to say to someone, oh, you've got good genetics. Well, no, I haven't. I've just worked really, really hard for a really, really long time. And so genetically, I sort of think maybe my good genetics are the fact that I can just work hard for a long time. Maybe persistence and being stubborn is a good genetic I have, you know? Mm. And I'm not, you know, I'm not putting down anything that I have physically as well. But I think a lot of the time we can overcome our downfalls or our weaknesses with time and hard work.
Yeah. So when you're working on your physique, do you have like a genetic weak point and genetic strong points that there is a limit to how they will grow?
I've certainly got areas, well, at the end of the day, muscle tissue is muscle tissue. So it will grow if you teach it to. So, for example, my quads are better than my hamstrings. But then if you look at the way I do things, I load my quads more because of my body posture or whatever. So I think a lot of the time people will confuse the fact that they've got a weak body part with the fact that maybe they've just not trained it correctly. Because I've always thought, oh, my back is my weakness, because aesthetically it is a weakness. Now the girls on stage have always had better backs than me. But actually, when we then broke down our back training, it was like, do you know what? I've actually just been training it wrong. So this time, this last few months, we've really changed up back training. And I can guarantee this time on stage, it won't be such a weakness. So I think a lot of the time, it's more you just need to really think about how you're training. And then that is the reason it's weak, or that is the reason it's strong. Maybe indirectly, you know, you might know people are quad dominant or hamstring dominant or whatever, and that's often why they've got big hamstrings or big quads. They're not necessarily doing it deliberately. Mm-hmm. And then you'll often find people that have got like a really beautiful muscle group, they can just really connect with that muscle really, really well, and they don't even know they do it. So I know my weaknesses, like my upper body has always been weak, my rear double bicep hasn't been great. But again, I think that was my own fault, not training it quite as accurately as I should have been, basically.
How do you know if you're training it accurately? Like, well, did you just like slow it down, go lighter, basically start all over again? Because obviously you trained it for a long time before you thought, I'm not training it.
The thing is, there's a lot of misconceptions. Basically, what we did this time was it was like, right, let's actually look at the physiology of certain muscle groups. Where do they tie in? Which direction do they move in? And if you start to actually look at that, you'll realize what you've been doing hasn't been moving the muscle in the right way. So the muscle's not going to grow if you're not contracting it properly. So, and it's a lot more, it's the body is so complicated. Doing a lat pull down doesn't mean you're going to get big lats, because the lats move in all different ways. So it wasn't a case of ever training it wrong per se, but it was a case of, I've got to this level of muscularity. Now I need to really change something, because they can't just get stronger. Because ultimately, when you begin, I sort of just say to people, get strong and then muscle will grow. But when you get to a certain level of development and something still isn't growing as well, you then have to dig into it and understand why. And it'll always be because you're either your execution is bad, so you might be doing the right movement but doing it poorly, in which case change your execution, make sure you're being accurate. Or it might be that you need to sort of hit certain movements from a different angle in order to recruit the correct muscles that you're actually trying to grow.
And did you feel that?
Massively. When we sort of break down our pull sessions, for example, with my back, after doing a couple of training sessions with the new movements in, I was like, shit, I don't think I've ever trained my back before. Like, mm-hmm. All right, that might be why it's rubbish. So you can feel it. Like, I think you know, like, you'll know yourself when you go into the gym. If you do a session, you're like, wow, that exercise really hits my quads. And you know, so you can feel in the moment if you are recruiting a muscle. So I think that's just really, really important. And if you're not, then you need to look at why not. Is it my execution? Is it just the wrong exercise selection? Is there something else, you know? So it's, I think you need to just sort of trust your instincts, and then also read and look around into the biomechanics of the body, and try to learn from those people that have done so and that know how the body moves and works. It's incredibly complicated. So instead of just looking at your favorite bodybuilder training or whatever, actually go back to the, you know, grassroots if you're really struggling with something, and try and find out if you're doing the right thing, and then you should be able to kind of reconnect with the muscle.
Yeah, I definitely did that, because first of all, your back, I wouldn't say is your weakness.
Thanks. Yeah, that's the thing. But then, so it's not weak because I just got strong, but it's weaker than it should be in comparison to how strong I am. Does that make sense?
So,
and then now I've reached a shelf of like, well, I'm just getting stronger isn't working, so I need to do something else.
Yeah,
so
that's, I think I'm probably the same. Now you've said it, my back is getting stronger, but it ain't getting bigger. Like, you don't see any back muscles of mine until I'm super, super lean. I've got rear delts, so that's it. So I think they might be picking up.
That's 90%. The thing. That's the thing. You're probably doing, I mean, it's the same for a lot of people. Maybe any upper back movement you're doing, maybe you're actually moving it with your rear delts and not your upper back. Hence why your rear delts are growing and your upper back isn't. Yeah. And then it's very difficult sometimes to distinguish, because unless you know what you're trying, you can really visualize what you're trying to hit, you're just rowing. But you don't know, if you do that and you have got dominant rear delts, they are going to do the work, because our body is always wanting to find the easiest way to do everything. So when I leg press, my quads will take over everything unless I tell them not to, basically, because they want to. They're strong. Why would they? My body is being lazy. It's recruiting what it knows. So maybe that's something that you need to kind of look into and eliminate your ear delts.
Yeah. Gosh.
Suddenly it sounded a bit intense, you know.
Get rid of you.
Get rid of it.
So you said about your squat being a poor mechanic. Yeah. Do you still squat a lot? Do you think that's important for your growth, or would you just do other squatting motions?
I haven't barbell squatted for a long time. For a while now, probably about a year. Because for me as well, my lower back is my weakness. So if my legs are much stronger than my back. So if I was to squat with a barbell, free bar, my back is going to crumble way before my legs want to give out. So I'm not even reaching muscular failure. So why am I squatting? So then in which case I need to do, you know, hack squats, leg presses, pendulum variations, where I've completely eliminated the weak link and I can actually just fail on my quads. So no, I don't personally barbell squat, because unless you are a good barbell squatter and it feels great for you, I don't think it's the best movement to use.
Yeah, I fucking hate squatting. I hate it. I've got no glutes, no hamstrings. I feel like my quads take it all and my back takes it all. My legs tend to straighten first, and no matter how light I go, that's just what it wants to do. Hence why I'm now going physio.
Yeah, and hence why just don't barbell squat. If you don't need to, don't do it, because it's going to hurt you. So what's the point?
What's your favorite leg exercise if you wanted to turn on your hamstrings?
Yeah,
if they're your weakest.
So for hamstrings, to be honest, I just like isolation. So a lying hamstring curl with good form for me beats up my hamstrings like nothing else. Also, you know, stiff leg deadlift, RDLs, like 45 degree hyper. If you can really get into your hamstrings with those, then that is fantastic. So those would be my favorite hamstrings. But if you're really, really just trying to train your hamstring, for me, I really like just a lying hamstring curl, because my glutes are really dominant as well. So, and obviously with my lower back being a weakness, with my stiff legs, I'm always going to get to the point where my back will crumble before my legs do. So again, it works up to a point, and then I have to change movement because it's just not doing the job. So, basically find the movement that you can hit well and accurately for that muscle group and just work with it and develop it.
How does your split look like? Do you have hamstrings and quads on the same day?
Yeah, I train push-pull legs with a rest either side of leg day. So I do legs all in one session. But with the pull session, I have just been doing stiff leg deadlift. So obviously recruiting hamstring in them. But now I've changed that back to a different variation, because I'll change those. I'll progress them up into the point I feel like I'm going to get injured, and then I'll stop, basically. So my lower back was feeling really tired last session. So I literally thought, not doing it, I'm changing the movement. And then I'll do like a more quad dominant pull. So the trap bar pull is really great for me, because it's basically like a squat holding a bar, and my legs are strong, so that works really well. My split is push pull legs with rest either side of legs.
So you don't push through injuries as soon as you feel a niggle?
Well, I do. Well, no, I do. Like, I've played with injury, really. So I had a chiro today. So I've got niggles here and there. But the thing is, I've never been this strong before, so my tendons and stuff just can't keep up. And it's just part and parcel. Like, I'm not injured, I'm just niggly, but I'll never push it. I can feel the difference between that feels a bit vulnerable to, therefore be careful. So I can gauge whether something's going to be okay or not, really.
Yeah, when I squat now, I get like shooting pains down the back of my legs.
Yeah,
and then I put it down.
Like,
I'm like,
oh no. Oh, darn, no. We've all been there. We've all pushed beyond what we should have done. But it's just a case of learning your limitations and then kind of avoiding it.
This is what happens when you've got home gym. I've only got a barbell. That's it. I need to.
That's it. Yeah, it's a nightmare at the moment, because you haven't got any option. But in a couple of days, you will. So get out of the spot rack.
I'm going to be on that hack spot and I'm going to live on it and no one else is using it.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah, just take it off mine. Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
You mentioned pyro. Do you get massages and stuff like that as well?
No, I literally just get chiro. The last few months I've been having it weekly or every sort of 10 days, purely because my body is at that point where I just need help to loosen it off. Like, yeah, I need a bit of manipulation and some deep tissue, maybe a bit of acupuncture. So that's perfect. My knees have really taken a beating as I've got heavier this time, and my legs have got really strong, so my knees are just niggly and tired and whatnot. So I only see him. I don't have anything else, and this is the first time I've been consistent with treatment, really. It's the first time I felt I've needed it consistently, but it all just goes completely, it correlates completely with my strength. So yeah, I can't, it's my own fault basically. So self-inflicted.
Yeah. Even do you like do a lot of stretching and stuff like that after you train?
Not really. I stretch a little bit after training, but I don't do huge amounts of stretching. I'll stretch, at the end for a couple of minutes, and that's it. Yeah, I could do more, I guess, but I just don't. So again, it's my fault.
I've seen this new thing of cupping.
Oh, I've never had it done. But,
no, yeah. I was going to ask if you've had it done because it looks.
No, I haven't.
And I it just wondered. I don't know what it does.
Do you know what? I've not looked into it, I've not asked, so I don't know. But I'm up for giving any sort of treatment a try, and then if it works, it works, you know. But no, I've not tried it.
Have you tried sports massage?
Yeah, so, but the sport, they have to be good at what they do. And so I find going to, I know a couple that are very good, so that's not me saying the ones I've used are rubbish. They have been very good. But so I go to chiro, A, because obviously in the current times, sports massage therapists aren't allowed to work, whereas chiros are because they're doctors. But also because he then has all the tools, like I can get manipulation, I can get acupuncture, I can get everything in one go. So when I need something beyond just a massage, he's just the person to go to for me. I think it's worth it. And I think if the person feels they benefit from sports massage and just being loosened, then it's definitely something I encourage.
Yeah, I would benefit, but I just can't handle it. My pain threshold is minimal and I just can't. I'm literally crawling off the table. It's my friend of mine that does it and she has to like sit on me because I will kick her. Reflexes, I'm lashing out.
No, it is. I do know what you mean. It's that pleasure. It's that pleasure pain thing. That I don't mind it. I think I've got a high pain threshold, so yeah, I can deal with it. But I do know what you mean. Sometimes you just think, get off. Like, this is not. Why am I paying for this?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Or I'll have a giggling fit because she's like in my armpit doing my lat, and I'm literally crying, and I'm like, get off me. I saw that you have a gym now. That is only open to PTs.
Yeah. Well, it's not open yet. It'll probably be all finished sort of in a couple of months. Basically we wanted our own place to train, basically. So it's just a treat for ourselves, really. And then we thought that we'd like to open it up to PTs so they could then, provide a good service in the area to their clients, using some really, in our opinion, like the best kit you can kind of get. But we don't want to open it to the public because that's not our vision for it. It's not what we want to do. That's not what we've done. So currently that is just an exclusive sort of place to train, like a large studio, I guess.
Yeah. How big is it?
It's like 2,000, 3,000 feet. Yeah. So it's quite hard to kind of, say how big it is in relation to something else. Like it's 3,000 feet, so it's a big unit, basically. So I don't know what else to say to compare that, really, but that's how big it is.
And you've just done that just so you do have your sanctuary.
Yeah, we wanted to train in private and have somewhere where we could do some really good content for the site. And we wanted to buy the kit that we wanted to buy because we were training at MJ's and we just kept seeing kit that we wanted. And we, moved it into MJ's. We were lucky enough that we're good friends with Chris that owns it and he let us do that. So that was great. But then we got to the point where we thought, actually, let's just do this in a different place. You know, let's stop disrupting MJ's and make something for our own. And we could have, pictures on the walls and various different things that we really wanted. We could get exactly the kit we wanted and the content will be so much better because it's in like the lighting's great. We've painted it black and everything. So,
yeah. Nice.
Excited.
Did you start that during lockdown?
We started
because of lockdown. You thought, oh fuck this.
No, we it was kind of something we've wanted for a while anyway. And then literally just when the opportunity arose, we thought actually let's just do it now. So it wasn't really in relation to lockdown because we had our own kit anyway that we could train on. So it wasn't because of that. It just coincided that it would be. And obviously, it's going to be ready when gyms are open anyway. So it's kind of like irrelevant if it was for that. But we've started that project in like November and it will take a good couple of months more for it to be finished. But we're getting there. We're certainly getting there.
Yeah. You said content. That's for your forum.
Yeah, that's for the site. So we obviously film for that regularly and we have all our other athletes film for it as well. So yeah, a bit of like video for content and stuff when they come and film our session.
And people can subscribe to that, can't they?
Yeah, they can.
Watch that. Do you put anything on YouTube or anything as well, or is it just strictly for the forum?
We don't. We have got a YouTube channel, which we haven't really utilised much. Maybe we possibly will in the future. But thing is, we've got the largest membership site in the world for bodybuilding and things, so we don't really need
don't
to.
Need it.
So we're on there, and then if people want to watch that, they can, and if they don't, they don't need to. That's what we use the content for.
Yeah, fair enough. When you're training for powerlifting and when you're training for bodybuilding, do you train differently? When it comes to like sets, the type of training, the splits.
So I've kind of like always done the two almost simultaneously. So I've kind of just kept my main sort of hypertrophy bodybuilding setup. And then I've just focused on the lift. So when I did the last time I did it, I actually changed like a more of a an upper lower split. And then I had like deadlift and then my session, bench, then my session, squat, then my session, bench accessory, then my session. So I've always just trained both at the same time, and with my key lifts I've just periodized my numbers, so started with three sets of eight and then taping it down or taping it up in sync with the time frame of the comp. So I've never really been a power lifter per se, like I've never just trained for that. I've always just sort of tapped it on to my training, so to speak. So that's another reason why I don't do it, because I can't do both at the same time, and I'm not prepared to sort of spend any time really focusing on that kind of training, because I know that that would then be a detriment to the physique that I brought. I've always just kind of done it, tapped it onto the training that I've been doing at that moment in time.
Yeah. You train to failure quite a lot.
Yeah, all the time.
I'm not sure I know what training for failure is.
Yeah.
Think I am, and then I've seen videos like yours and I'm like, oh, but if I didn't it's not the same. How do you, because I feel like I push myself but it's not to failure, how do you know when you're at failure, if that makes sense? I'll do weights and I'm like, oh, a little bit more weight on, and then I can't do one and I'm like, but it's, I've just done 10 slightly lighter.
Well, the thing is, you know, you don't train to failure. So therefore, you know, you could do another rep. So then that's how you train to failure.
So it's
you
worth...
just do the other rep, you know?
But I feel like I am. Does that... I can't really explain it.
No, I do know what you mean. I think a lot of people, most, in honestly, most people I've ever seen train don't actually train to dream failure. I don't think it's a normal thing to do. So basically, when I'm in a machine, obviously a safe machine, I wouldn't risk it on like a barbell spot with no spotters. That would just be insane. I'm not trying to kill myself. But like on a leg press where you know that if you fail, or a hack squat, you know if you bottomed out the bottom, you can just crawl out without ever injuring yourself. Just push until you literally, it comes back on you. Push until you fail. Push until you end in the hole. So if you know you're not going to get that next rep, do it anyway.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I've always believed, you know? So I don't know where failure is. I don't know when it's coming, but I know I'm going to find it.
I think that's the problem. I'm thinking, okay, yeah, failed. I won't be able to get that next rep because I don't want to end up in the hole. But I suppose if there's a safety net, then that's the point.
But if you're in the hole, you've failed. If you're not in the hole, you haven't failed.
Yeah.
Basically. So, like, kind of, next time you do a set, make, you know, almost switch off from even thinking. Like, I don't think to myself, I'm not going to get this rep. I just think, there's another rep, go for another rep. And then if I don't get it, I don't get it. Like, I have my numbers because I logged it. So I know that last time if I got four plates for six reps or something, I know that I'm going to be doing four plates plus half a kilo and I'm going to try and get four. But that doesn't mean I'm going to stop at four. If there's five on the day, I'm still going to try and get five.
Yeah.
So I'm never going to stop. I'm just going to try and keep pushing until there's nothing left to push. Yeah. Until it comes back on me. And then I know that that's failure.
Now I'm going to say something really obvious. It is until you literally fail.
Exactly. And this is what people don't actually do.
It's like, I've got it up one last time. Like, yeah, I don't think I can do another one.
Yeah. But you don't know.
Yeah. No.
Sometimes if I bet you any money, if you were in the hack spot and you did 10 reps and went, I don't think I can do another one. If I was standing next to you, I bet you'd get another five.
Yeah.
I bet you would. Because you just... The body will do more. Like if the mind has stopped it won't do anything, but your mind is very powerful. So if you're not stop thinking basically and just do, I think is the best way to do it. Have like a rough target, you know, be sensible, make sure you're not going to hurt yourself, but on most pieces of kit you're not going to hurt yourself because you can fail safely, and then just go, and then actually aim to fail, aim to not be able to get a rep. And then you know you're...
Yeah, it's on my plan, like the last set, like, failed, basically. But like I said, it's only until I stop and I'm like, I don't think that is fail. At the time, I feel like I can't do any more, but it's not, I haven't failed. Now, I'm going to be a mess. When I go back to the gym, I'm going to be a mess.
Oh, don't, But I think just try and think less and just do more and just be a bit braver with it, like... It's easy sometimes. Don't just tick off the session because you've done it. Really make sure that you have done the session. Every single rep, every single set, walk away from it going, okay, yeah, failure found me. And then just that's the way to do it, I think.
You fail every session.
Yeah.
With every movement? Is that how you train?
No, like, for example, when I know with me with pulls, I'll never go for a risky pull. Because I'm going to hurt myself.
As in like a deadlift off the floor, kind of.
Yeah, so a deadlift floor. I'll do the last rep that's really hard, but I will never go for one that, even in my head, I think I'm not going to get that, because that for me is going to lead to an injury. But again, that's just with experience. But literally every session I will fail on most things, definitely. Like, for example, sometimes if I'm going up on a leg press, so if I do one set and I know I've got another one, I might not do the failure rep. So I will fail and go to my absolute, but I won't then do like the eccentric failure where I can't get out. So say if I did two half spots and I did one set, I would make sure I could re-rack it just. I wouldn't then deliberately bury myself because I know I'm going to do the second set. And you can only like sort of, you know, burn, you don't want to burn the candle at all the ends. Mm-hmm. Just sort of, make sure you're training to capacity, beating your logbook on every single rep, and then when you know you can fail, really fail, and when you know you can take it there, really take it there.
Mm. Do you do, because obviously you lift so heavy, do you have to do a little warm-up set to get up to your heavy, or do you jump up quite quick?
Not really. I don't jump up quickly. I just warm up. Like, for example, say, like, it's all relative, really. Like, if someone's max was like one plate and mine was three, for example, I might do like a plate and a half, two and a half work. That person would probably then do like 5 kilo, 10 kilo, 15 kilo work. So it'd be the same amount of warm ups. It's just, you know, same kind of percentage of your max. So yeah. I might have to do more sometimes if I'm really going for a heavy pull, to do an extra one to make sure I'm really ready. But I think the warm up's about the same because people are, you know, you warm up relative to your strength, I suppose.
Yeah. But obviously, I've seen some people in the gym, they'll start with a bar and then bang, 100 kilos, but then they can only lift like 120.
Yeah. I would say that's probably just not warming up properly. but it's up to them. If that works for them and then they're warm, that's fine. But I make sure I go up, you know, increments on my main work sets before I get to them.
Yeah, I'm a teeny tiny like jumper as well, just because I don't know what I'm going to be feeling on the day.
Exactly, yeah.
When in my cycle I am as well, when I'm on my period, I'm weak as fuck.
Okay.
But I think might be a mental thing as well.
I think so.
Because I'm bleeding out.
Exactly. I think a lot of people, I'm not saying you want to find blame or find excuse, but I think, like you just sort of said, you don't really train to fail. So, like, I think you're probably aware of things that are going on with your body. So then you've psychologically connected that to feeling crap in the gym. So then before you go in there, you've already told yourself you're not actually going to be strong. So you're never going to be strong if you told yourself you're not.
Mm-hmm.
Basically. Yeah. So I just don't think about it. I'm going to be strong every day.
And make sure
I'm strong every day. And make sure I PB regardless. Doesn't matter if I've had no sleep. Doesn't matter if I feel like shit. Doesn't matter if I've got so much stress. Doesn't matter if I'm on my period. Doesn't matter if anything. I'm going to PB today.
That's brilliant. So inspiring.
Yes. Or stupid, I don't know.
Well, yeah, but that's how why you're so successful as well, because your mindset is like
I think you've got to have just a very focused, like, aggressive mindset to it. And then, you know, I know that I've got a shelf life, so I'm just gonna get it done now.
Do you have like certain things you do before you go to the gym, like to psych yourself up, or is it you walking in the gym, that's it, you're psyched? Or do you have like music?
No, I don't listen to music, actually. I don't wear headphones. So no, I don't do anything. I have the same routine every morning: get up, eat, walk the dogs, cook the next meal, do some work in the morning. But I don't have any routine. I don't get psyched up. I've never done that, even when I've lifted. I'm a very, very silent kind of lifter, really. I just know that when I'm in there, regardless of everything else, I've got a job to do. So I don't need to be psyched. I don't necessarily need to feel good to get it done, because I know that I will get it done. So I just ignore anything external, really, and just focus on that moment in time and do it. But I don't have any rituals or anything like that. I don't need that. I think just the motivation to be what I want to be is enough to make me do it, you know?
Have you always been like that?
No, I don't think so. Like, since I've been training seriously, like, Jordan's had a huge, like, that's Jordan's mindset. That's very much him. That's what he's instilled into me. Because he's always had that mindset ever since he was a kid. I was just standard. Like, didn't do anything, you know. I was literally not very normal childhood. And again, I use the word normal in relation to myself, because I don't know what normal is, but I was a very standard kind of childhood. So I've not always had that mentality, but I've certainly picked it up in the last few years, and I don't actually have, it might come across that I'm really sort of confident and have really high self-belief in myself. I believe that I can work hard. That's my self-belief. But I believe that Jordan sort of tells me what he believes I can do, and I believe in that, if that makes sense. So I very much work off his energy of, no, I think you can do that. And I'm like, really? All right. But then, like I said, I'm stubborn. So if he said it, I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake, all right.
Now I have to. Cheers.
Better do it now, you know. Exactly. And that's kind of the way it works, which sounds maybe odd to other people, but then that's purely a positive thing. That isn't him forcing me to do anything or anything like that. That's just the way our dynamics work. He has the self-belief and the confidence, and he pushes that in onto me, and I don't necessarily absorb that as self-confidence, but I believe that he believes in me, so I'm going to try and fulfill it. So he's very much put that attitude into me to try and achieve the tasks, whatever task I'm doing, really.
Yeah, I suppose people do tend to believe what other people say to them rather than what they're saying to themselves, because you always say worse stuff to yourself.
But yeah, I think it's very, I think it's rare to have a lot of self-confidence. I think that's rare. So I think it's easier to lean on other people for that. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think that's great. Like, people lean on other people for support, and I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. Do you always train together?
Yeah.
Every day?
Well, not every day, but yeah, when we train.
You have the same program?
Exactly.
Different way.
Yeah, exactly the same movements. Every now and then, like, for example, one leg session, I'll do a set of side raise before the session, before the rest of the session, sorry, purely because I need to really focus on my delt development. But other than that, we have exactly the same programming. And yeah, just slightly different weights. But other than that, it's exactly the same.
A lot different weights?
Is
there like a big difference in the weights?
On some things, yes, and some things, no. So like for high rep quad work, I can almost match him, because I'm good at high rep work and I've got strong quads. Whereas like for like certain press movements, I'm nowhere near. Like, I know that if I'm working at just above, if I'm working at about 50, 60% of his press work, I'm there. If I'm working at like 60% of his pull work, I'm there. And if I'm working at about 70% of his leg work, I'm there. Like, that's kind of how it is. So there is probably weight discrepancy, but there would be. Like, he's like a 260-pound man. Like, I can't be that, you know.
Is it more, I suppose it's just as much workout trying to take the weights on and off? Or do you have to have separate muscles?
No, I do all the weight moving. But I'm used to it. That's just kind of like the dynamics of the session. So I kind of like just used to it. Like, just lift it. I suppose that probably helps my warm-up. So
yeah.
Just the way we do it.
So you're training for a long time, like a few hours? Or you
quite... our sessions are usually like two and a half hours long.
Why not?
Well, yeah, I mean, we're not moving at a slow pace either. It's just is what it is. Like, that's the time it takes us to do the work, so we get it done, and then
As a woman bodybuilder now, have you ever come across any negativity being the size you are?
Sometimes you do. Like, in society, so bear with one moment. Put the oven on for your food. Okay, sorry. sometimes you do feel, you get stared at, basically, because you don't look quite like everybody else in society. Because, you know, if you've got a lot of muscle as a woman, equally, if you've got a lot of muscle as a man, you get stared at as well. So, you know, but it's not something that's normal or usual or typical within society. So you're always going to stick out. So negativity, have I found, I do get some negativity, but typically I just avoid that, like online and things. I don't, if anyone says anything negative on Instagram, I'll literally just block their account and that's that. I don't, the positive far outweighs the negative. Like, if I put a picture up or something, there'll be, just for example, if there's 100 nice comments, there might be one horrible one. So as a percentage, I don't care. Like, if you do something that's outside of the usual, I think you open yourself up to criticism and negativity from people that aren't used to that. And then that's okay. You know, some people that dress, that dye their hair green or dress in sort of gothic clothing, for example, I'm sure they've experienced negativity. So I think anything that is against your standard society is going to attract attention. And within that attention is going to be some negativity.
Yeah, there's always some arsehole. And it's normally people not part of the, like, fitness community.
Always,
as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Always.
It's very rarely someone that has any comprehension, because even if somebody, I'm very well aware that a lot of people don't want to look like me, and that's fine. That's fine. But equally, they won't, you know, they might respect, for example, I doubt very much you would like to be a female bodybuilder, but you respect the process that other people do. Therefore, your perception of female bodybuilders is not negative. It's more, you know, it's just, it's enthusiasm, or it's like, oh, you know, well done, you know. You can see, you can credit it for what it is. Similarly, I don't want to look like a bikini girl. Not that I ever could either. So, but I respect that category for what that is. So, yeah, it's very rarely within the industry, because they just don't.
Yeah. Also, I would love to look like a woman bodybuilder, but I don't train hard enough. I don't eat hard enough. And I'm now 30, so I'm late.
Well, and when you get your blood work back, you'll know that the bottom, when it says it's not possible because of X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
You'll be fine. You got your excuse.
I was actually having a discussion with someone at work. They were describing someone, they called them Butch. And I flipped my lid, being the only girl at work. Why not? I just find it really strange when people go on about the whole feminine thing. Because how I see it is, I'm a woman. Therefore, everything I do is womanly, and that's it. No matter what I do, no matter how I dress, no matter how I look, no matter how much muscle I put on, I will look like a woman, because I am a woman. I identify as a woman.
I agree. I think we should all be allowed to identify it with ourselves in whichever way we want. And I don't think it's up to other people to categorize others, because perception is independent as well. So what I perceive to be, you know, ugly, pretty, you know, whatever, that's my perception. That's not their reality. So I do agree. I think we have the choice to be who and what we want to be, and we can categorize ourselves as where we know we fit best.
Yeah, especially when I don't even know when like that came out, because I'm sure like years ago in like caveman times, they weren't saying, "Whoa, that's not feminine, hang on." When it's actually, I was listening to a podcast and it was proving that a lot of women were hunters, so I was like, fuck you.
There you go then. Yeah, exactly. So maybe that was, yeah, exactly. No, you're right. I think it's just society, isn't it? You know, yeah. It's the increase of social media and how we should look and how we should behave and whatnot. That's then become the definition. But like you said, that's not reality. So no. we can define ourselves how we like, basically.
Yeah, it's too much of an individual thing, I think.
Exactly.
So when is your next bodybuilding show?
Hopefully all going well. I think it's July 18th, it's that weekend in Portugal. So if we can travel, that will be my show. And then I'm going to do as many shows as I need to get to the Olympia. So there's a string of them in that period. So there's like Portugal, Tampa, Chicago Pro, which is actually in Arizona, but whatever, Alicante. So I'm going to have a good crack at those. If I can get enough points, then I'll do the Olympia, which is in October. If I don't get enough points, then I won't, because I won't qualify. So, but yeah, that's the goal. So 14 and a half weeks. 14 and a half weeks out from that show.
So when do you start your prep?
Well,
you're always prepping, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. It's a hard question, but I started taking calories down about 2 weeks ago. So then, I suppose, when you start to reduce, when you start to actively put yourself in a deficit, is essentially the start of prep. So about 2 weeks ago, I started to make my first dietary changes. And there we go.
Awesome. Well, good luck in all of them.
Thank you.
I have a couple of questions. I always ask, I guess, a couple of questions that are just random, to be honest.
Okay, cool. That's cool.
Do you think bodybuilding is a sport or a pageant?
I think the process is a sport. The day is a pageant.
Would you ever train CrossFit?
Yes. I'd love to.
CrossFit. Same.
I'd love to.
Yeah, but with my niggles, I'd be fucked. What movie world would you prefer to live in?
Pass, although the, you know, Lord of the Rings, Elf Land looks quite nice. Very Elf peaceful. Land,
yes.
I don't know what it's called, so that one.
The first thing you're going to do after we're lockdown free?
I would like to go and visit my nan, because I haven't seen her for ages.
Oh, that's nice. Do you have a bucket list? If you do, what's the top? Is it going to be Olympia?
That's up there. I don't know what number one is. It's certainly on to get to the Olympia and to place at the Olympia is on the bucket list. And to just sound so washy, but to just be really happy would be is like in my bucket list. That's why I'd like to just be happy.
What an answer. What an answer.
Sounds washy, but it's true actually. It's
oh, thank you so much for coming on. I've learned so much.
My pleasure.
I always train after my podcast because it inspires me. Now I'm going to train like a dick. So,
just don't hate yourself.
I know. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Bye.